Hi, I'm Christian Yordanov. I'm a functional health practitioner and I'm author of a couple of books. This is my latest book, How to Actually Live Longer, Volume 1. It's available on Amazon. It's all about longevity. So if you're into that topic, check it out. I also offer free intro calls for potential clients that would like to work with me to help them resolve their health issues. You can go on my website, read about my services, what I can do for you, and you can book a free intro call if you think that you want to get to know me better, explain where you're at, and you want to hear out how I can help you out and see if we're a good fit to work together. So check out the website. If you need personalized help and you're sick of these symptom masking, short-sighted tactics, and you want actual solutions that can actually make meaningful, transformative change in your life. Now, today, I want to talk about depression, anxiety, and insomnia and how they're connected. And when you look at the stats, the diagnoses are at an all-time high. Prescription medications for depression, anxiety, and insomnia are at an all-time high. Just in between 1999 and 2014, in that 15-year period, antidepressants use increased by 65%. I was looking at some stats. It was like 43 million prescriptions for antidepressants in 2019 in that region. And basically 20% of the US population, 1 in 5 people, take antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs. And the pharma companies are making eye-watering, record-breaking profits. People are the worst they've ever been in terms of psychological and physical health. So it's clear that drugs are not the answer. Anyone that thinks drugs are the answer, this is probably not the video for you, right? But I'm sure that that's not you. You understand that you need a much more comprehensive solution. And I am confident that I can provide you with that solution if you are ready to make some diet, lifestyle, supplement changes, things like that. If you're ready to do some of that work, it's not super hard, but you have to know that some change and effort will be required, right? The clients that get the best results are the ones that are ready to make changes and to follow the program. I will teach you exactly what you need to do. It's just a matter of you then doing it, of course, with my support. That is what I do for my clients, right? And this is the thing. You cannot take a pill that can undo decades of stress, and most often stress coupled with suboptimal lifestyle, diet, and exposure to toxins. You cannot just take a pill to undo that. That is why we need a comprehensive approach. It needs to be tailored to the person's specific situation. And people need support because it's difficult to change lifestyle habits if you don't know exactly what to do, right? If you have to learn while doing it, while making mistakes, right? So I already alluded to it, right? So the biggest factor here with depression, anxiety, and insomnia is stress. Not just psychological stress, but physiological stress can play a big role. And at the end of the day, stress, just to define it for you, is a strain on the body that results in the release of stress hormones, things like cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, or in the US, epinephrine, norepinephrine, right? And these stress hormones, when chronically elevated, are destructive. They're damaging. A very simple example, cortisol literally causes cells to break down so that they can be turned into glucose in the liver for the most part, and other things can be done with them. And that is what cortisol does. That's one of its primary functions too. It's there to raise your blood sugar. So when you're stressed, the stress response system kicks in, the fight or flight nervous system, also known as the sympathetic nervous system, that kicks in. Cortisol goes up, adrenaline goes up. These cause the blood to go to your arms and legs so you can fight or run, whatever. And the blood goes away from your gut, so your digestion is halted. And that actually has a detrimental effect on your gut. That's why people with IBS often are very stressed, right? And stress exacerbates their condition because of these mechanisms, right? And then cortisol will stimulate the breakdown of your muscle, your bones, your joints, your skin. Adrenaline will raise your blood pressure. It will cause your fat cells to start breaking down and stuff like that, right? So this is the stress response. And if it happens once in a while, like in nature, it's fine. It's a survival mechanism, but many of us are living in it day in, day out. You know, traffic to work, screaming kids, bills to pay, you know, dealing with either clients or your boss or your team, or, you know, there's vendors. There's so many stresses right now that many adults live their life in chronic stress. And this chronic stress, when it goes on for a while, it almost breaks the negative feedback loop. So just to briefly explain, so cortisol, it's an adrenal hormone, so is adrenaline. These are stimulated, the release of these is stimulated by a cascade of other hormones and neurotransmitters, right? So it starts in the brain, in the hypothalamus, that will release CRH, corticotropin releasing hormone. That will then stimulate the pituitary gland to release ACTH, which is the adrenocorticotropin releasing hormone. That will travel in the blood. That will cause the adrenals to secrete the cortisol and the adrenaline that I just mentioned, right? So when that cortisol goes up, the hypothalamus, it kind of monitors the blood, and when the level of the cortisol increases, it's a negative feedback mechanism, so it will lower the CRH release. So when you're chronically stressed, these mechanisms, these feedback loops, they can actually be damaged. Also, our cells can become resistant to cortisol. That's a thing as well. So it can basically allow these stress responses to continue unabated. And this is what I'd like to kind of paint a picture of for people. This is why I use supplements to help people get out of this chronic stress response, because you can't just out-meditate this. You can't just... A lot of people that I work with, their cases are so serious, so severe, that we just cannot undo a bunch of this stuff with just improving diet and exercise and drinking more water and meditating and stuff like that. We need some of these supplements to basically accelerate the process, right? And I'm super sort of grateful. I mean, we have to sort of count ourselves lucky that we have these tools, is what I'm trying to say, to it, so that we can at least leverage them in an ideal world, we wouldn't have these health issues, stress and depression and anxiety and whatever else to begin with. But when we do, at least we have the tools that we can leverage to physically lower cortisol, right? So instead of doing breathing exercises, meditation and exercise and whatever else to lower your stress levels, we can directly lower them with a few different supplements. So this is what I like to introduce at the start of a program, because what I found is, when we can get a person to start feeling better quicker, sleeping better, having more energy, and so on and so forth, then they have more reserve, more energy, and more willpower to then make the more serious changes. So for example, a lot of people are living in this chronic stress because it could be because it's inescapable. Maybe the job, maybe the business, maybe the having the two kids and the baby and whatever else. So I'd like to give people that support in the beginning, and then we can figure out the diet, the improving sleep, all of these other things, and then people will have more energy to actually do these things, right? So, you know, this is why what I do works, and we get amazing results because we leverage really awesome tools. Okay. But at the end of the day, the true work is in the dietary and lifestyle habits that you improve over time, right? Because if you are constantly overworking yourself or putting yourself in situations where the stress continues unabated, that will never be the long-term solution, right? You have to figure out what stressors you have to mitigate or completely remove at the end of the day, right? So just to give you an example, one notable type of stress is social stress that induces physiological effects that block healing. For example, animals exposed to long-term social subordination will present altered HPA set points. So basically, just to kind of spare you the jargon, this sort of social subordination, this is what can cause this glucocorticoid or cortisol resistance. It can basically alter the stress response pathways. They can lower the immune system and can change various behavioral things. And that precipitates these quote-unquote affective disorders like anxiety and depression, right? And they've actually done this animal research in humans, would you believe? And turns out, so here's the example. A San Francisco Federal Reserve study noted that the highest rates of suicide occur among non-affluent people who live in affluent areas. So this study strongly correlated a sense of low worth and utility when individuals' relative income is less than those around them. When social stress creates low self-esteem, affective disorders thrive. So affective disorders like bipolar, depression, and anxiety, basically. Patients under social stress may need significantly more support to help regain mental health. And so the reason I share that is because I can help with improving your physical body, and we can muscle cortisol down, and we can do things to lower adrenaline, and we can take supplements to help with sleep and to keep you in a more sort of calm state during the day, and then supplements that will give you more energy and help you extract more energy from food. So we can do all of this really cool, fun, awesome stuff that I'm really good at. But if you using that newfound energy and improved state of being, if you don't do some work to maybe get out of a non-productive relationship or a toxic relationship, or maybe figure out a way to delegate more of your work, if you don't do these things, then I haven't really done my job, because my goal for you is to be able to change, to facilitate you in changing lifestyle factors that are causing the stress, right? So I'm helping you in the midterm so that you can help yourself in the longer term. This is what I really want to kind of stress this, because I don't want to be like the consultant to, oh, can you give me some pills so I can work 18 hours a day and sleep 4 hours and still be able to function. I can do that, but I don't want to do that. I want to help people create truly lasting health. And to do that, we have to sometimes just cut things off that are slowly killing us. So that's what I wanted to add there. Now, in terms of mechanisms, so let's just talk about sleep for a second. So people that can't sleep almost invariably have a high cortisol level, and usually with that high adrenaline level, right? And that can be caused by stress, but a lot of other things. It can be caused by gut dysfunction, gut dysbiosis. It can be caused by your bedtime routine, some food that you ate, food sensitivities. These can cause inflammation. And cortisol has an anti-inflammatory role secondary to its role as to keep your blood sugar stable. So if your blood sugar drops, cortisol kicks in to raise your blood sugar by causing tissue to be destroyed so that it can be turned into glucose. But its secondary role is an anti-inflammatory. So if you eat inflammatory things, cortisol can be a trigger for that, right? Or if you eat things that are causing, this is getting a bit technical here, but basically there's certain bacteria in the gut that we can feed by eating the wrong foods, and they can cause inflammation, right? And immune activation, which can itself be a stressor. So you could be, your sleep issues could be due to a number of things, but it's at the end of the day, it's always stress, whether psychological or physiological, it's a stress. And my job will be to help you identify those stressors, right? So here then is how sleep can exacerbate anxiety and how sleep can actually make mood issues worse. So I'm just quoting from one of my textbooks here. Adequate sleep is critical for repair, healing, and detoxification. During sleep, inflammation is balanced. So remember, inflammation is a stress. Mitochondria are recycled and created. Mitochondria create energy. Neurons regenerate. Like, we need healthy neurons to not be depressed. The hormonal system resets, and the digestive tract cleans and repairs. Without proper sleep, balancing mood is near impossible due to deficiencies and imbalances in all these processes. Poor sleep predicts worse outcomes in depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder, right? So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the sleep problems that caused the mood disturbance? Or was it the mood, the stress that caused the poor sleep? Either way, continuing to sleep poorly will continue to cause stress and mood issues, right? So one of the things I do with my clients is we add sleep support early on, but the idea is for that to sort of provide some relief early on. This is intelligent, and you know, using these tools in an intelligent way, and also using supplements that are the body recognizes, right? So amino acids and vitamins and minerals, not chemical concoctions, right? So we're using natural things that promote sleep and relaxation. And then over time, people need them less and less, or they find like a smaller baseline that they can use, right? And what that does is when you help the sleep, that will invariably help repair, restoration in terms of other bodily systems. And that will have a lot of benefits for the mood and the anxiety side of things, right? Because when I don't sleep, I'm going to drink more coffee. And then obviously I'm going to be a bit more hyper. And that's a forward feeding cycle, where then the next night I still might not sleep so well because of all the coffee. I might be more snappy to people around me that can, you know, mess with relationships. So if I just fix my sleep, the next day I'm much nicer. So that's just an example of one aspect, how we can attack the problem from one way or from one direction. And then that can have a lot of benefits to other things in the body, right? Whereas if you just knock yourself out with a pill, well, you're not really addressing anything. You're not addressing a lot of these other things. And, you know, the next day you're kind of back to the same spot that you started. Now, other things that can cause sleep problems, so alcohol, I mentioned excessive stimulants. We know psychological stress is a factor. High levels of stress hormones such as cortisol and norepinephrine. So I already mentioned these. But another thing that can mess with your sleep is your hormones, estrogen and progesterone. If they're imbalanced, that can affect neurotransmitter production. And we know estrogen itself can drive a lot of, any woman that's had PMS knows what a high estrogen and a low progesterone, what horrible symptoms it can cause. And disturbed sleep and mood is one of them, right? So this is another area where I help my clients balance things a little bit with, again, diet, supplementation, various other things, right? Then blood sugar dysregulation is another thing that can mess with people's sleep, right? A lot of women, most women actually, undereat chronically. That causes a lot of hormonal changes. So we have to fix that, and we have to fix the timing of meals, the timing of macronutrients. A lot of women are not eating carbohydrates in the evening, thinking it's going to get stored as fat. And I don't blame you, because we are all being pounded over the head with this propaganda that carbohydrates will make you fat and all this stuff. And so there's a lot of damage control we have to do, a lot of this program we have to undo with a lot of my clients. And actually in my book, How to Actually Live Longer, chapter 4 is all about why low carb and ketogenic diets are not good for longevity, right? And I explain, it's a fifth of the book, that chapter. It's pretty long, relatively speaking. So there's a lot of re-education, that unlearning and relearning we have to do with my clients around this topic, which leads to blood sugar dysregulation, which leads to high levels of stress hormones if we don't address it, which can then lead to imbalances in estrogen and progesterone. So again, all of these systems and sort of functions, they're all connected. So if you improve one, other things improve. Whereas if one gets messed up, other things can be knock-on effects that mess up other systems, right? Now, gut dysfunction is another area where it can not just cause sleep issues, but also mood issues. And I'll touch on that in a little bit, right? Another thing that can affect mood issues and sleep is lack of sunlight, right? So it's said that... One report suggests a 12-minute exposure of 50% of the body's skin at noon to noontime sun on a clear day is equivalent to the oral intake of 3,000 international units of vitamin D3. So if you make 3,000 international units of vitamin D3 in 12 minutes of sun exposure, What that means is, if you don't supplement at least 5,000 international units of vitamin D3, if you haven't been doing this for the last years you've been alive, it means you probably your vitamin D level is quite low, right? And low vitamin D is a feature of most health conditions, right? From autism to depression, to multiple sclerosis, and so on and so on and so on, right? So that's another thing that a lot of my clients need help with optimizing. And the other thing is, if you don't get plenty of blue light from the sun during the morning time especially, you're not really resetting your circadian rhythm daily. And that can translate into more difficulty falling asleep, right? So you produce less melatonin in the evening if you're just stuck indoors all day without adequate daylight. And then in the evening time, what most people do is they are blasting themselves with blue light from their TV, from their computer screens, phone screens. And most clients that I start working with have almost non-existent sleep hygiene and environment tactics. So I teach them how to optimize the bedtime routine, how to improve the environment. Of course, we add the supplements to help with sleep support, but you always have to, as always, like I like to say, we have to attack the problem from multiple angles so that we can have a solution, not just, oh, I can't sleep, I'm going to take this pill, it's going to make me sleep, and then I'll keep doing the same things over and over and over. And when that pill stops working, what then? A stronger pill, alcohol, God knows, you know. So we want to not go down that road. So lack of sunlight, low vitamin D levels, definitely a link between that and poor sleep, low mood, depression, and so on, right? Then the topic of gut function. So, I mean, this is such a vast topic. In a few minutes, I can't really say much, but basically helping my clients improve their gut function is central to my program, right? Because the gut, the intestinal or the gastrointestinal tract, it's not just a means for nutrient absorption and elimination of, you know, the stools, whatever. It's what is known as a neuroendocrine organ. So endocrine relates to hormones. Neuro relates to the nervous system. So nervous system and hormonal effects is what the gut exerts in the body, right? So it has a what is known as a bidirectional, like a two-way street relationship with the central nervous system. So the gut, it's kind of, some people call it the second brain, right? And there's a lot of evidence that bowel disorders are correlated with disruptions in mood, right? And almost two-thirds of patients with anxiety and depression are described to have intestinal function disturbance, such as irritable bowel syndrome. That's almost two-thirds of folks with anxiety and depression having something gut-related, a condition like irritable bowel syndrome. That is huge. So improving, I tell you, you will not find one case of a person with some fairly severe health issues where if you improve their gut function, they don't improve in some way. They will always improve in some way if you do a gut cleanse, liver cleanse, and, you know, add some probiotics and stuff like that, right? More stats. Almost one-third of patients with major depression are thought to have constipation, and patients with IBS are more prone to both anxiety disorders as well as depression than are individuals who do not have IBS. And then even in bipolar disorder, there's a strong association between mood and gut symptoms. So, right, so as I explained earlier, stress will disturb gut function because the blood goes to the extremities, the limbs, so you can fight, climb to safety, and run away, right? Then there we have the aspect of inflammation. As I mentioned already, inflammation, that's an archetypal stressor in the body. So in my book, How to Actually Live Longer, in chapter one, I talk about the three primary drivers of aging and dysfunction. The major one is stress, and then oxidative stress and inflammation are the two others, and these feed into each other. And I call inflammation and oxidative stress the archetypal stressors in the body because they're caused by a lot of things. So a lot of things cause inflammation, a lot of things cause oxidative stress, and then they cause a lot of problems in the body. So inflammation can cause, you know, brain degeneration. It can cause immune system dysregulation, autoimmunity and stuff like that over time. Oxidative stress can damage all cells, which means it can contribute to depression. It can contribute to Alzheimer's, atherosclerosis, a bunch of other things, right? So they're archetypal. And inflammation, smart clinicians know that inflammation will greatly contribute to depression, anxiety, and poor mental function. Right. Inflammatory markers such as CRP and interleukin-6, IL-6, are typically raised in situations of anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder. And a big, obviously, because I talk about it in my book, I have strategies on how to lower inflammation in the book. And a big part of my work with clients in the program, I do a lot to teach you how to lower your inflammation, keep your inflammation low, and protect against things that cause oxidative stress and further inflammation in the body, right? So really an important topic. So we also know chronic inflammation in the digestive tract can lead to intestinal permeability, also known as leaky gut. So this is again why I talk about gut function being so important to improving a person, right? Almost all of my clients either have a gut problem or they have other issues that seem unrelated to the gut. But whenever we do investigation of the gut with, let's say, a stool test, we invariably find gut dysfunction of some sort. So overgrowth of certain bacteria, low levels of the, you know, the regular microbiota like the lactobacillus or bifidobacterium, these guys. So gut problems are such a big factor in all conditions. And you have to remember, just because it's a mood issue, just because it's a software issue, right? Anxiety, mood, these things are created, precipitated by physical things in the body. So very simply, anxiety, it's often an increase in stress hormones, and a lot of these are proteins. A lot of these hormones and neurotransmitters, a lot of them are proteins or fat molecules, right? So these are physical things that are creating emotional and psychological and mood disturbances in the body. So this is why the gut is so important, because inflammation that's caused by the immune system. Most, or not most, but some 70% of the immune system is in the gut. So if you have a gut disturbance that causes inflammation, that will cause activation of the immune system that can then damage structures in the body, brain cells and so on, that can, you know, cause further oxidative stress. And then you can have, if the damage is in the brain, you can have any number of symptoms, from brain fog to eventual neurodegeneration and Alzheimer's. So again, I don't want to get too convoluted here, just trying to make the case really clear that why my program is so comprehensive, why we focus on detoxification and liver health and gut function and improving all the stress stuff I talked about, and the diet and adding the supplements. You really need to do all of these things if you want to create true health in your body that you can then maintain for the rest of your life. Now, depression, and this is quoting from the textbook of natural medicine. It's a 2,000-page, massive, two-tome, two-volume set I have. $250 is what it costs. So it's a serious, very serious book, fifth edition. So quoting from there, depression and fatigue have been linked to food allergies for more than 19 years. In 1930, Rowe coined the term allergic toxemia to describe a syndrome that included the symptoms of depression, fatigue, muscle and joint aches, drowsiness, difficulty in concentration and nervousness, right? And although the term is no longer used today, we know both adults and children dealing with food allergy will show impaired quality of life, a higher level of stress and anxiety, and increased incidence of many diseases. For example, both celiac disease and gluten sensitivities may present with a wide variety of neurological and psychiatric comorbidities. And then they state, a meta-analysis of that's the next topic. So, yeah, look, food allergies, food sensitivities. People think it's a gut thing. No, it in some people it just causes skin problems. In other people, it just causes headaches. In other people, it just causes joint pain. And then yet in others, it can cause them to not sleep. It can cause them to feel depressed. Then I didn't even mention that if you have parasites, if you have gut dysbiosis, that can also cause sleep problems directly or indirectly, because it's a stressor. It can raise your cortisol and other stress hormones. And I personally, back in early 2019, I had parasites, protozoa, and a bunch of other gut dysbiosis that I got tested for. And I use that same test now with my clients. And it was a game changer. I figured it out, and then within a couple of months, I was just in such better shape. In 2 months, that gut dysbiosis, that initial infection, grounded me down, right? So I really believe a lot of people who are living with this kind of low-level chronic inflammation, gut dysbiosis, that is contributing a lot to their fatigue, mood problems, that's, you know, that's mediated by inflammation, immune system dysregulation, and so on, right? And further, so we have further evidence for this as well, is that there was a meta-analysis of probiotic supplements for mood. So there was 5 randomized controlled trials in that meta-analysis with a total of about 280 patients. And it was between 4 and 8 weeks of the duration of the use of the probiotic supplements. And then the analysis revealed that probiotics significantly decreased depression scale scores in depressed subjects. Interestingly, there was no effect in patients older than 65 years, which may suggest that there are more formidable digestive concerns that need to be addressed among the senior population. But here is the thing. Probiotics only as a sole intervention reduced depression scale scores in these studies. So I'm hoping you're starting to see that there's a lot of stuff in the body that can contribute to this stuff. Then we have B vitamins, right? So B vitamins play an important role in neurotransmitter production, mitochondrial function, where we make energy, and a number of other things, right? So there's been an association between B vitamin deficiencies, especially B6, B12, and folate, with higher prevalence of anxiety and depressive symptoms, right? Then there was an evaluation of 3,500 adults that revealed higher intakes of B6, B12, and folate, whether through foods or supplementation, were associated with a decreased likelihood of incident depression for up to 12 years of follow-up. And then for each 10 additional milligram of vitamin B6 and 10 additional micrograms of vitamin B12, researchers found a 2% decreased risk of depressive symptoms per year, right? So these are associational things, but still. And then in females with known evidence of vitamin B6 deficiency in the blood, due to oral contraceptive use, which is often estrogen and sometimes progestin-based, supplementation in these women with B6 deficiency due to oral contraceptive use of 40 milligrams per day with vitamin B6 improved both anxiety and depression. And if you go back a couple of weeks in the podcast, I was doing the episodes on estrogen, what you need to know, and PMS, various hormonal and nutritional factors that are associated with it. So if you go back to those episodes, I talk about how vitamin B6 is used to detoxify estrogen. And estrogen can cause a lower levels of B6. And then B6 is used in so many other things, like neurotransmitter production and a bunch of other stuff. So can you see how, especially for a woman, having high estrogen can lower the B6 level. And then the B6 level can have an impact on other neurotransmitters. Let's say not enough dopamine gets produced. And then if you go back to those episodes, I talk about a low dopamine can cause a high prolactin, which is also one factor in PMS. So there's a lot of layers and connections here that we start to unravel. And this is why women that take just vitamin B6 can have improvements in anxiety and depression and PMS symptoms, right? Because there's so many the little intricacies that some of them we don't even know about, right? And then I can go on about folate. Low folate status seems to be more associated with low mood and depression, but not as much with anxiety. folic acid has been well implicated in depressive disorders, and folic acid deficiency has been noted among people with depression. Some estimates suggest that up to 33% of depressed individuals are folate deficient. Several studies regarding its role in the pathophysiology of depression show that patients with depression often have a functional folate deficiency, and the severity of such deficiency correlates with depression severity, right? Now, what the hell does that even mean? So a functional folate deficiency can mean your blood levels of folic acid seem okay, but functionally there's some bottleneck in the body. That means it's not getting produced, or it's not going to the right places. So one simple example is there's a very famous genetic polymorphism called MTHFR, the methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase gene. So I have that gene, that specific polymorphism that messes with the body's ability to produce sufficient methylfolate, right? It's one of the steps in the folate cycle. So that polymorphism is associated with a bunch of things, including depression. And what do you know? I have depression running in my family. Could it be a coincidence? Could it be a factor? I think it's definitely a factor, right? Because we have a lot of other things that are associated with that polymorphism in the MTHFR gene, including atherosclerosis, for example, right? So we can get really deep with clients. So with some clients, we do genetic testing, so we can actually see your methylation genes and certain other genes, and then we can, you know, design the program around those as well. And the beauty of those lab tests is you can do a genetic test once and it's for life. You will always know what to do if you have a specific vulnerability. But then, of course, we can also do lab tests that give us an exact snapshot of what's going on in the body right now. So we can check the gut, we can check hormones, we can check other things that allow me to create a more customized program for you specifically to your needs. Now, we are already going to do that because my intake questionnaires and all of that process, it assesses all major systems of the body, so I will know which of your systems need the most support, right, based on all that intake process. But it's always good to get the data because it invariably will help us to accelerate the process for you. And then just another example here, magnesium. So in the previous episodes, I discussed how magnesium is needed to produce progesterone, right? And progesterone is needed to balance estrogen. So that's a big source of hormonal imbalances for women, right? But low progesterone low magnesium can contribute to that issue, right? Which can contribute to PMS or any number of female type stuff going on, right? But magnesium deficiency may be a player in the pathophysiology of affective disorders such as anxiety and depression, because the HPA axis, so the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, is very sensitive to magnesium status, right? So if your magnesium status is low, like many people's, that makes the body more vulnerable to increased inflammation, damage of the nervous tissue, things like that. Then we have a lot of women have a low zinc status because they don't eat a lot of meat and they don't eat a lot of animal products. So a lot of B vitamins tend to be low in women. And we can actually test for this with the organic acids test. But in terms of zinc, low zinc status can cause low levels of GABA, the inhibitory neurotransmitter, and that can increase anxiety symptoms. Then zinc levels are also decreased by stress and inflammation. And actually, zinc is needed to create hydrochloric acid and some digestive enzymes. So having a low zinc status can compromise gut function. And then the gut function being compromised, that can again contribute to all of these problems. So it becomes a really horrible, vicious cycle for a lot of women. And that is why I want to work with clients for ideally 6 months, and then in more serious cases, 12 months. I also offer a 3-month package, and we can do some pretty good work. But with these more complex cases, I prefer for us not to rush, because you can see there's so many intertwined things here. You can't just, it's like a ball of yarn that you have to unravel very slowly, let the person sort of let their body adapt to a couple of supplements, some dietary changes, let them rest for a while. And, you know, the body will unravel some layers of dysfunction, do some healing. And then you have to hold steady, plateau for a while, then add the next stage. So obviously with older people, we generally go slower. People that have a lot of sensitivities and health issues, we go slower. Younger folks or someone that's been unwell for a shorter period of time, we can go a bit faster. But again, the whole point is that you get a program that's specifically designed for your needs. I think that is the game changer for a lot of people. So just because it's already been 45 minutes, I'll stop it there. There was a bunch of other stuff I wanted to talk about, but maybe I'll do another episode on some of these topics, because as you can see, there's a lot of stuff going on. So I think it's probably better to just start focusing on what to do today, what to do this week, what to do, you know, tomorrow, this kind of stuff, instead of trying to figure it all at once. And this is what I can help with. I can guide you every step along the way. So if you would like to know more, if you'd like to meet me for a quick chat, schedule that free intro call, and then let's get you started on the right path. Because as you can see, you need time. You know, you need time to learn these things, change some habits. Sometimes it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But the important thing is to get started, because at the end result, you're going to transform your health. And at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. So that's it for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next episode.